listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, the one and only Scott Gershon. Scott.
Hi, Mike.
Across the table from him, we've got Brandon Birdside.
What's up, Mike?
Wait. I so stumbled over your name.
How many times have you said that?
I know. Brandon Birdside.
Hi.
And finally, last but not least, we've got the one and only Rob, the Iron Man Arbiter.
Hello, Mike.
Hey, Rob.
Hello, everyone. We should just like bow and say Rob.
That's it, guys. This is show number 102. We're down to four of us.
Wow. And then there were four.
And then there were four.
Crickets going.
And because there were only four of us, I called one of my friends. I'd like to welcome Brett Johns for joining us here today.
Hey, nice to be here.
Brett was...
Hey, that voice sounds familiar. Yeah, hey, this isn't his first time.
He was in show 1,464 and a half.
Brett was like in the 20s somewhere, I think.
Yeah,
but it's actually pretty cool that he's here, because when Brett was here for the first time, he was basically just starting in sound effects and just getting his feet wet and trying to figure it out. And now, you know, he's been working a lot and has a good steady gig. And I don't know if we can talk about any of this stuff, but I know he's doing a lot of cutting. So,
and now I'm still starting out. Fantastic.
So it's good to have Brett with us. Man, there's a lot to talk about. Tons of stuff to talk about. First thing I want to talk about, though, is I want to mention, I don't know if you guys noticed on the last podcast, 101, but we now have a new sponsor.
Really? API. And who is it?
API.
Who?
Is a sponsor. Is our sponsor.
API.
We had a great run with Apex, and you know, their stuff's really good. But we're now getting, you know, we're going to shift a little bit, and we still use the channel strips from Apex, but we're doing some more stuff with API. And Westwave is an API dealer, so we've had a really good relationship with Larry and all the guys over there. So they are full blown sponsors.
API is just
awesome.
Cool.
Oh,
they are.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's awesome. So and in
I'm waiting for the Lamborghini sponsorship. Yeah. So yeah. Everyone here gets a Lamborghini.
Does that mean I'm getting paid? Fantastic.
That means the lights stay on. So in honor of API being our sponsor, I've got a couple swag packages with a
really
T-shirt. No, actually, it's a college shirt.
Can we get them too?
Hey, we should throw in one of the Yamaha, you know, little console. DMP7?
DMP7.
A free DMP7 with every T-shirt.
If you don't mind one that doesn't work, I can hook you
they're,
up.
They're really nice college shirts, so we got some swag from API. So if you send us an email to audio@nowcastnetwork.com, that's audio@nowcastnetwork.com, and just let us know why you like the Audio Nowcast. And we'll pick two of the three emails that we'll get.
Uh-huh.
and we'll send off the swag. And I guess if I exclude my parents, then we'll only get two emails. So
well, I'm actually one of the emails. So, you know. So we have our listener, you know.
That's right, our listener. We'll take care of them.
Yeah.
But anyhow, so it's really great, and I don't have to, you know, we don't have to oversell API because it just kind of sells itself. But it's amazing stuff. Yeah. Best mic pre's out there.
And what is their website if people want to check out what they don't know?
APIaudio.com. That's cool. APIaudio.com. And there's some really cool stuff. Check out the new lunchbox that has DB25 connections in the back and has a pass-through and stuff like that. I mean, some amazing. Their stuff just sounds so good. So it's great to be affiliated with them. And I'm glad they bring our reputation up.
A lot of hit records. Speaking about sounding good.
Yeah.
I'm using this as your...
That's
what
a segue.
As your last segue. Come on.
Oh, you're throwing
it
to me.
Yes, I'm throwing it to you. Talking about sounding good.
We're not going to get into that yet.
We're not? Okay.
We will.
All right.
But that was a good, you know what?
I thought that was good, though.
That was good.
Segway gonna ride. I've got my good segue. After 102 shows, I have a segue.
All right. Well, on this show, a couple things we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. And one of them, speaking of sounding good, I'm going to pick it up.
Okay.
We're going to talk a little bit about the whole Rebecca Black phenomenon. And And the 62 million hits that she has on YouTube. And
62 and one. Because we just listened to it. Yeah.
And so we'll talk a little bit about that. I have a different spin from everybody else's, so we'll talk about that. We're also going to talk about what I call homegrown sound design. I'm going to use the trailer that actually the teaser that I just mixed and did some sound design for the Prey 2 video game. But right now we're going to talk about a new piece of gear.
Really?
New piece of gear.
What would that be?
I picked up a new piece of gear that is the most awesome little thing I've played with in a long time. It's a 4-octave micro keyboard, and the reason why it's so cool is because that 4th octave makes playing a decent sound, a decent chord, really doable on a small little keyboard. I actually got it right here.
Okay. Ooh.
It's the micro keyboard. Here, I'm going to pass it around, guys, because it's so small.
It's my Korg.
But it's I don't know if you guys have ever used any.
I mean, it actually looks a lot more like 3 octaves to me. But maybe I learned to count wrong.
Hey, 3, 4.
He is right. It is very small for a 4-octave keyboard.
You know what? You're so right, because the 4-octave one is the Microsynth.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, keyboard's only 3 octaves.
It's still cool. It's still nice and small.
They didn't sell you a 3-octave board for a 4-octave price, did they?
Check the receipt.
Oh, God. I'm going to have to figure out how to do an edit there, because that's just going to be stupid.
No, there will be no edit. Remember, Mike, to share what you're taking.
Anyhow, the 3-octave keyboard. I was thinking.
Sorry to burst your bubble there.
No. They have the Microsynth that has 4 octaves, and yeah. Anyhow, that extra octave, my point is allows you to get a bass in there. And it really allows you to play some decent chords. And I'll tell you, I don't know if you guys ever worked with the small little keyboards, but like when you do some traveling and things like that, it's an amazing little thing to have with you.
And you plug your iPhone in, right?
No. Well, you can plug in your iPad to it.
I think everything's really small. You can't see anything. You can't play anything.
But you know, these keys are playable.
They are.
Yeah, they're playable.
They're
my son would love it.
Yeah, hooked up to a MacBook Pro. But the problem with a lot of small, tiny, portable keyboards is you either get 1 octave, 2 octaves, or the action's really bad. That's velocity sensitive. It's an amazing feel. I mean, obviously you don't have a sustain pedal, but if you're just playing and you need some velocity, it's pretty awesome.
I think it would also be cool for a controller, vocoder controller, and all those kinds of, you need something small. Yeah. That even might sit next to a keyboard. That you can either that or changes the presets within a
absolutely
program. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Well, Korg has actually sold keyboards just like that. They're a couple octaves and a vocoder, and
yeah,
they have the
it's a good way to work.
The one I had, I had the Nano key. I don't know if you've seen those, but that was the very first one, super flat. The keys were more like buttons, and that was just it kind of sucked. It was not that good.
So I want the 18-foot keyboard. You can jump and run on it,
but
that can be arranged,
But I find myself, though, having that little keyboard is being able to create in places where I may not have, done so before. Like, if I'm in my office and I have this idea, it's super easy to pop it up, plug it in, and start playing, as opposed to sometimes, everybody has their own routine when they go create. You know, I've got to fire up the keyboards, things like that, but a little bit more spontaneity really kind of adds to the creative process. I don't know, Rob, do you ever, when you create, like, you have your studio, do you ever feel an urge and use a small little device or anything like that, especially when you do traveling?
I don't travel that much anymore. When I used to travel, I had a small setup. I'm constantly figuring out ways for Stevie to be able to travel. He insists on a good feeling keyboard,
right,
and a good size. So I'm always looking for the next best way to work. It's pretty cool, because in the old days we used to have to drag a bunch of synths around,
right,
besides the controller keyboard. And now, the computers are powerful enough. You can basically do everything you need to with virtual instruments. So I would never work on something as small as like the iPad, but a MacBook Pro and a 3 or 4 octave keyboard. That's about what I'd use.
What's cool is, though, talking about iPad, I know Elisa's has announced its interface.
Right.
So you slide it in, and you have all the I/O available, and then you have a USB, and just connect it up and use the little keyboard there.
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. What about you, Brett? Do you have a small keyboard controller for your sound design and stuff? And
I do. I mean, for the most part, I use a full-size keyboard, but I definitely use a, what is the Novation?
Yeah,
remote.
Right. Uh-huh. I love you. We have those as well. They're great. Two octaves.
Yeah, and just flip up really quick. Yeah.
See, but that's 3 octaves.
Yeah, but there's no sliders on it.
No, I know. It's hey, and it was relatively inexpensive, less than $100, so you can't beat that. What about you, Brandon? Would you ever use a small little thing like that?
I've got a couple mid-sized keyboards, one at work and one at home. But I have been lately, it's not a keyboard, but when I have ideas, it's funny, I'll be sitting in my studio, I've got the whole setup over there, and I'll be at the piano, and I don't have my mic set up, don't have the pre's on, maybe the computer's not on, so I just pull out the iPhone, and just hit the memo, and hit record, and play a little tune, and then, it's not like it's quality that you could ever use, but for sketching out ideas.
That's the whole thing, man. It's just finding a tool that empowers you to be creative. I mean, those are the best ones, and it doesn't work for everybody, but...
Well, also, there is a difference between just being able to bang out some chords or actually being a keyboard player.
Right.
So if you actually want to record something that, you know, sounds like it was played by a keyboard player, chances are you're going to need at least 60-note or 76-note keyboard. That's just the way it works.
Well, also, too, having that extra octave allows you, you know, to get the chords, even while you're writing, to get that bass note in, which really fills in a lot of the, you know, just fills it in.
Yeah, you're right. If you're stuck on an oxygenate or something really small, it's really tough to, you know, even get your second hand really doing much of anything.
Yeah, and it just doesn't sound full. I mean, you can put, like, Omnisphere with the, you know, hybrid strings and hit a pad, and you're like, ooh.
Yeah.
Anyhow, the micro key from Korg, less than $100. Awesome. Love it. 3 octaves.
And if you like that, I'm sure Mike has a 3-string guitar. He knows how to, which would be really cool.
You're a funny guy.
Save space.
Another thing I want to talk about, guys, is I want to talk a little bit about sound design. And basically, sometimes you got to do a job and you got to just work with the tools around you. And I just finished working on a project, and I posted a link on Facebook, but it was the Prey 2 trailer, actually teaser trailer. And I got the job. I was going to mix it. And when I got the files, they needed a little bit of help, because of the style of the trailer. The sound design house that did some of the sound design, it was a little, it just wasn't what the creators were looking for. They were looking for something a little more real or more raw sounding. And basically I had an afternoon to throw some sound design together. And so what I did is I borrowed Brandon's H4N, because I didn't even have mine with me.
By the way, did you get that back?
I just have to thank Mike for it.
Have we just seen the video? A couple dents, a couple scratches.
He said, can I borrow this? I'm going to hang it out my window on the highway and record some wind. Sure, Mike.
I did tell him that. I said, no, if I drop it, I'll give you mine. But it was just, you know what, though, when I was in the middle of it and having to do Foley and having to do, you know, ADR and just come up with some sound effects, it was a lot of pressure. It was a lot of, like, you know, it had to get done the next day because they had to post it. And, you know, you get squeezed so much that after a while it turns from sheer horror to actually having a good time, because you guys ever been in that position where you just can't believe how much you have to do, that you just
every day.
I mean, it was crazy. And then you have those, like, little beautiful accidents that happen. Like, for instance, the aliens, their laser blast, were a little light. So I had an editor work with me, and I said, hey, Nick, I need some laser sounds. Why don't you go to your bay and put together 5-6 laser sounds so that we can choose which one sounds the best? So he goes away and he does some edits, and he edits them to picture, because he was actually a picture editor. Puts them together, hands them back in OMF, and they're all lined up. So we're going through all of them one at a time. And nothing's really grabbing us. It's like, because it had to sound, first of all, it had to cut through all the chaos that was going on, but then it also had to sound a little concussive, and it had to sound like energy and real. And so we're going through each one. It's not working. And by accident, I unmute them all and I play it. And all of them together worked out perfect. It was
one and done.
It was awesome. And I wanted to ask you, Scott. I mean, when you're working on the big feature films and things like that, does that ever happen to you? Just these beautiful little mistakes that you're like?
Oh, of course. I mean, they're all strategic mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, you just start throwing stuff against the wall and see what sticks. And then finally, you know, what I find is one of the things, either mistake will turn into something golden.
Right.
Or it'll inspire you in a different direction. So you'll do something and you go, wow, that doesn't work. But you know, it sounds a lot like this. And because a lot of times, you know, it's kind of like a writer. You got a blank page.
Right.
And you're trying to figure out, you know, where do I start? What right. do I do? How do I approach this? How do I... And you start throwing stuff out and, you know, or you hear a buzz or you hear something, you walk by something and you go, one day, that's cool. So you keep this kind of mental database, you know. And,
right.
And elbows, arms on keyboards tend to work, you know. Yeah, I did one where I was, I actually played the feedback off of mic and my speakers and re-recorded it for some Creature Whales. Because I just went, ooh, it was those were the days with analog consoles.
Right.
And it was like, ee-ee-ee. You know, you just sit there and you can actually pitch it and tune it by how much feedback you do. So, yeah, and then you say, wow, this is kind of cool. And that was totally a mistake and, you know.
Yeah, because it was pretty funny, though, playing it the first time because it's almost like Eureka. And you're like, because some of them had the energy sound and some of them had the percussive, you know, impact stuff. And mm-hmm. so you put them on top of each other and like... That's it. That's the one we want to go for. And quite frankly, didn't have a lot of time to do much more than that. But it was pretty amazing. You work in a different – what I liked about it too is I only had the tools that were around me. So anything that was in my bay to make the sounds that I need to. And for a brief second, you know, I'm not a full-time sound designer, but I just could imagine how much fun – you have, Scott, when you're like, okay, create a universe, and you just get to start from scratch, and you just get to, I mean, you build your own rules. It's like, you know, nobody.
Yeah, but there's a lot of panic in that process.
Well, yeah, but when you approach sound design, especially of things that you don't know what they sound like, but you know what they don't sound like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically, I was finding myself approaching things like, I don't know what this gun sounds like, but I know it doesn't sound like that. And I know it doesn't have that kind of a sound. And I was thinking, you know, that's something that when people have to work their way out of a sound design problem, you know, they should work backwards sometimes.
Yeah, no, I've got, I start a movie on Monday, which I could talk about in the future, but it's a superhero kind of movie. And I've got to come up with a lot of signature sounds. So, part of me in my head is going around, what would that be? What could that be? And while I'm finishing up another project, I'm spending the last week and a half doing nothing but thinking, listening, thinking, what could this be? And you kind of do the mental task.
Right.
So, and for me, a lot of it comes to me as I wake up, because I think about it all night long when I sleep. And then I kind of wake up and then I kind of go, hey, what about that? You know, and.
Do you create rules for your universes? Like,
nope.
or do you just go with what sounds like, you know, well, by rules meaning like, okay, this universe, the energy only works this way and it's only a boltish type of sound or it's only a humming type of sound.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people do that going, you know, like when I was doing Flubber and there's this thing Weebo and this thing flying around.
Right.
And they go, well, it's mechanical, so we would never do this and we'd do this, do that. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. You know, it really comes down to what emotionally do you want to cover? Do you, you know, what strikes that character? Because I think that if you think too logically about something,
right,
you're going to miss a whole lot of opportunities. So I think what you have to do is kind of think outside the box.
Right.
I mean, if you think about, even like the old Star Wars stuff. The, you know, why would anybody, you know, that kind of thing? Nobody would ever done it logically because it would. It was a propulsion system, so it would
except
be noise-based.
Except the Jetsons.
So, you know, you look at those things, and then you experiment and see what could be done, and you know, using tremolos and pitch and FM and all these really cool things. And then you try things, and then, you know, one thing leads to another. Your eyes roll up in your head, and you start doing these in-the-zone thing. And
you know what? The same thing is true in music and sound design, and that is that overthinking is the enemy.
Right.
You know, a lot of times things just work because they work.
Right.
And that's the sign of an artist, is they just put together stuff that works.
Right.
But as soon as you start to overanalyze or overthink it,
yeah,
you've kind of just lost the point.
Yeah, it's, yeah, I can definitely agree with that, especially when you're under a deadline because you're losing
time. Well, yeah.
Time.
And then you're inspired by, you know, you're inspired by a lot of things you've seen. I mean, I don't very rarely do people create something out of the blue that's never been inspired by anything, just boom, there it is.
Right.
Usually it's somebody heard something, saw something, and they're doing their interpretation or perception of what that could have been. So everyone's building on what everybody else, you know, created before you.
Right. Well, I'm, you know, I get amazed by really good creature sound effects, because there's a place where you could, you know, this creature doesn't exist, and now you're gonna voice it, and you're gonna give it life, and I often wonder how many different ways do you voice it, and then is there one all of a sudden that, like, man, that looks like that's what it sounds like?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because one of the tasks that I have to do is there's a whole alien race of superheroes, and before they go into their translator, they all speak in their own language. So I have to come up with...
You don't have that in production sound?
Yeah. I'll go to that my alien library.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've got to come up with a kind of a version of the cantina in Star Wars, but, you know, with a bunch of people going, you know, kind of stuff, and just come up with all those bizarre things that, you know, you look at the big guy, what would he sound like? You look at the fish guy and the you know, flying guy and all these different types of people, what... I guess you do use the logic of what could they make, because I think you have to be able to ride that line of reality.
Right.
So if somebody heard something, they go, yeah, I buy that sound is coming out of that thing.
Yeah.
But you know what? There's a lot of suspended disbelief with that, because, like, think back to Warner Brothers cartoons.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of times if you'd see a little baby and it was going to start talking, half the time it would be goo goo ga ga baby talk. And half the time it would sound like a guy talking like this, you know, and it turns out it's like, you know, but either one kind of works. They're both funny.
Yeah.
And you suspend disbelief. So that's another thing about overthinking. As soon as, like, if you see a big creature, that doesn't mean it necessarily has a giant voice.
Right.
You know, it's all about being an artist and figuring out what's going to work.
Look at Mike Tyson. Rules.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but, you know, but that also talks about what kind of character. In other words, if you see this giant thing come up, it goes, hi, how you doing? You know, exactly. All of a sudden, that becomes comedy.
Yeah, yeah, right. It's hilarious. Right.
Yeah, so it depends on, you know, on what you do and how you want to go. But I think, you know, a lot of times in listening to some of the great creature stuff that I've been inspired by, it's, you know, hearing, who would have ever thought in Jurassic Park they would use imperial penguins? Yeah, oh, that kind of sound. That's penguins.
Huh.
So I thought, oh, that's because, you know, what happens is when you hear something, it's kind of like music where everyone kind of starts figuring out what they did and how they did it. So you hear sound design, you hear something, wow, how'd they do that? Then everyone starts dissecting it to figure out how they approached it, or they listen to any kind of article or. And I think that's kind of, you know, inspiring.
You know what else? If you're a sound designer, every now and then, because everybody has some sort of sound effects library or sound library of some kind, every now and then, just randomly go through it in some way where you can't tell what you're listening to. Like, if it happens to be CDs, I used to do this with CD libraries. Just pop in a random sound effects CD, call up some random track, and see where it takes you.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's amazing the way it'll open up your mind to different ideas. And as soon as you're not looking at what the label of the sound is, then, you know, all bets are off. You just become creative. It's one of the reasons Stevie was always so innovative with synth sounds and stuff in the 70s. He didn't know what these things were supposed to sound like. He was just using them the way they sounded cool to him.
Yeah, that's true.
And you can still do the same thing, though, with sound libraries.
And the cool thing about nowadays, too, is you have the incredible tools to be able to mangle your sound. I will say, like, for instance, I had to do one of the aliens dying, getting shot and dying, and I looked at it, and I had my iPad with me, so I just screamed into it a scream of pain, and then I used Curtis to kind of doctor it up a little bit, and it worked, and it's nice. The only thing I thought about was, like, well, if this guy's going to get shot, I'm sure the alien's going to be a little pissed off and also probably a little bit in pain, but not like our pain. So, you know, just did a bunch of screams, and actually the one that I ended up using was a total reversal of one that would sound normal, you know. So it started with a big hit and kind of gurgled off, and then this little clicking thing that Curtis does really nice.
So it's time to sell 6 Pro Tools rings and buy an iPad.
No, it was, listen.
Good to know.
That iPad was a great, talk about a Swiss Army knife for sound designers. I used that.
So what are you using to interface with? How do you get high quality audio in and out?
I came out of just a little mini plug, came out of it, went right into my analog in. Oh, well, I had to go into had to boost it up. So I went into my mixer, boosted it up, went right into Pro Tools from
there.
How
did you go into it with the 30 pin? How do you put sound into it?
Into what? Into
iPad.
Oh, no. It has a little microphone. It has a little microphone. I recorded myself on the microphone that is up at the top. I just, you know, you hit record and it does it. Yeah.
The iPad.
Yeah, on the iPad. It has a built-in mic and I just
recorded myself. You have an iPad 2 yet?
No.
What? What?
Do you know how hard those are to find?
Are they really?
They are. They're very hard to find.
I'll tell you where they're hard to find at my house. I still don't have an iPad 1 either.
But it's, you know, you just do that and you and then you can play it. All the distortion effects of the camera going in and out, that was all iPad, as well as the low note at the end with the little distorted graphics at the very end. That's all. That was iPad. That was Curtis on the distorted graphics. And then the low note that's kind of going oscillating up and down was just me playing the X synth that they have with my fingers. And you can adjust the modulation in real time with the multi-touch. And so it doesn't sound LFO-y. You know, it doesn't sound precise. It just sounds a little like, you know, really... Yeah. Really organic.
Funny to say organic. That's actually the hardest thing is, how do you make something not sound digital, doesn't have any aliasing, and sound totally organic?
Right.
And that's because I get called for that stuff all the time, and after a while, your brain explodes because it's a lot of my toys can make stuff sound really sci-fi and alien-esque, right. But to try to get something that sounds cute and cuddly and alive.
Or that conveys some sort of emotion.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
I had to put emotion to a Volkswagen, just driving by, and that was one of the hardest challenges I had.
I can imagine. The one thing that, you know, after you do all the sound design, I still had to do the mixing. And the thing about this particular thing is it all had to sound like it was coming from like a little flip cam, because that was basically the point of view. And that was kind of cool and a little difficult at the same time. The cool thing was is to get that flip cam effect, you know, they all have those built-in limiters. So you just kind of slam your L2 and you just kind of let it just knock it into shape, right? The hard thing is, though, is when it all starts slamming is getting definition between your different elements without it just sounding like a big giant mess of, you know, distortion. So it was there's a little bit of a game that you have to play with the L2 and setting your threshold so it's not squishing here but it's squishing there. But that was kind of fun. That was kind of a challenge, and the whole thing was just letting it just sound like it's coming from a little flip cam at the same time as you're keeping everything so you can hear the sound effects and you can hear the screaming and things like that. And then, of course, at the end is Brandon's H4N.
My Zoom.
Now it's an H2.
Being hung out the
four's hanging on a wall somewhere. You know?
It's on the highway.
Yeah.
the car window. It's actually, it was really good, man. That was awesome. That was exactly the same.
Yeah, it was great to see that in the spot.
It worked out really good. So, and then, you know, another thing I want to tell people is if you, let's say you want to do ADR and you need to liven up a place. And this time it was an airplane, but sometimes, you know, if you're doing a movie and you need to liven up like a cafe or something like that, and you bring a bunch of friends in and you want them to do Walla and they've never done any recording like that, what's going to happen is as soon as you hold up the H4N and say, okay, pretend like you're at a cafe, everybody's going to talk in a full voice and they're all going to be saying a lot of nonsense. And it's just going to be, you know, just this giant mass of unusable stuff. And what you should do is you should direct them. Like there's a certain natural, almost musicality about to the backgrounds where, like, I had these friends come in from work and they sat in the room. And then basically I just started to one side and I just kind of had them all, as I pointed to them, say a little something as we went around. So you get a bunch of different voices, you get a bunch of different textures, but you're not all talking at the same time. Because as a sound designer, you can always layer them, you know, and you can always place them. But the main thing is you don't want to get everybody talking at the same time.
You have to have control.
Exactly. Even I did a cough pass where I just pointed to people and I had them cough because, you know, when you're airplane, everybody's coughing, you know? And so
I'd have been perfect for that. I've been coughing all night. There's one now.
But I wanted to tell you that because if you're working on your own YouTube video, your own small, you know, film or something, if you record Walla, it really does add a lot to it. But just make sure you stay in control and you just, you know, make it like Scott said, do layers. You know, you want to have control.
And also realize that you could put a mic on a boom pole and you can move that mic. So if you want to, let's say, move it across 10 people on the line, you right across, take a shotgun so you don't get a lot of the other voices. And you can do some, you know, either you move the people or you move the mic. And that's something which I know a lot of studio people, they're not used to mics moving.
No, you know, that's a great music. Idea.
So, yeah, you can actually move the mic.
Especially if you have a lot of movement of the camera, if the camera's moving.
I've done that at Foley stages, too, where you just want to get that, you know, rather than that stagnant sound, you want to move things around and Walla group all the time.
That's a great idea.
Especially if you want to get that lo-fi, you know, stuff that's just, you know, because then you can mic the wall. You don't have to necessarily mic them directly.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because one of the things that I wish I could have had more time to do is I kind of put a bed of panic people and of yelling, but I really wanted to do a little bit more in the mixing and the motion of it. Mm-hmm. We just ran out of time. But it's perfect, client. It's perfect in every way. But it would have been nice to be able to get a little bit more of the texture of screams coming in and out and things like that. And
or have people run by you.
Yeah, no, that'd be awesome. That Doppler. You know,
or they run by you and you take the mic and you cross them.
That's awesome.
Also, keep in mind, if you're recording Walla groups and stuff like that and you're just starting out, it's not the same thing to close mic, record it, and play it soft as it is to distant mic.
Right.
Record. You should try to make sure that the mic has the right perspective to match the picture. Don't think that later just bringing it up or down is going to change the perspective enough.
That's true. And that's the great thing about these little handy, you know, like the H4N, man. Everybody, if you're into music or sound effects or whatever, if you're into audio, you should have some type of small digital recorder. It's your best friend. You're going to use it for things that you never even thought you would use it, and you end up putting it in productions or sounds.
Yeah, but
or
you need a good windscreen. Because I just bought an H3, or what is it, a Q3 HD.
Right.
The Zoom one.
Yeah.
I said, well, during the rains, this is great. I brought it outside because I just bought it.
Right.
And I'm waiting for the real kit to come out. So I did that. I said, this should be pretty good. And I didn't realize, though, there wasn't much wind. There was just enough.
Those mics on like the H4N and probably this thing as well, it sounds like they really pick up a lot of wind.
Because I've got a Sony, it was a D90 or something, small one, and I had to buy a whole like wind kit for it. And I've tried to buy the wind kit for the Zoom, but
do they have a wind kit for it?
It's coming out.
Oh,
you know,
you can just get a little. It's small enough that you can get, you know, any generic microphone. Stick it over.
But it's got the camera on it, so you don't want to cover the camera.
It's got the camera.
Oh, yeah. The camera.
Making, yeah, you know.
They can.
Get that yeah. Well, you know, I thought it was great because then between, I can actually see what I'm recording.
Yeah.
You know.
I was going to say, I thought I really missed something. Like, I thought it was a recording device, and but why does it have a camera? Just so you can
You know, it's interesting is that, you know, is it a camera that has audio or audio that has a camera? And it's not any different than kind of the camera phones, but it just happens the audio sounds really good. Mm-hmm. And it's got that Zoom audio. And what I found is different, which I liked, is it has a very natural sound rather than that close-up, high-fidelity sound. When I recorded a door, it sounds like a door in the room mm-hmm. rather than that close-up, you know.
Yeah. Right.
So it just has a very natural feel, which is great. It's a sound. It's a sound sometimes that you want.
Right.
And I thought it was great. I think you have to be careful about any kind of noise or hand movement.
Right.
Because a lot of people hear, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. you got this great thing and, you know, stop touching the mic, you know.
Right.
So.
You know what? I do know that there's some third-party windscreens that are available for it. Mm. Jeremy just instant messaged me that.
Oh, so, thank you, Jeremy. Send it to my email.
So I just recommend. I couldn't have done it without the H4N, and it was just awesome. Thanks.
Glad to help, Mike.
Of course, I got to tell you the reason why I could take his H4N is because he got this. Killer.
Because my H4N is collecting dust.
That's right. Rig, you got the sound devices.
702.
702, yeah. As well as the...
Sankin CSS5.
Sankin yeah. CSS5, man.
I took it out this weekend.
How was that?
I was at the foot of the runway at Burbank Airport. Oh. Yeah. Got some planes going over.
Really?
Great.
Is it killer?
But they sound fantastic.
But you know what's great about the small ones, which I like, having both, is that always carry the small one with you.
Because you never know.
You're never going to have your 702 with you.
Yeah,
but exactly. You always can have that small little guy.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, that's enough on sound design.
Thanks,
Mike. But you can check it out online, and I'll throw a link on it on our post for this podcast. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break right now, and then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Rebecca Black and that video and that song.
Why are we doing this?
We'll see when we come back. All right, so we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Outcasts. And before the break, we were getting a mini clinic on sound design by Scott. Scott, that was awesome.
Oh, there you go.
I want to change gears right now and...
Sorry. Oh, no longer sound effects.
I want to talk about something that I know, you guys, you probably don't want to talk about it, but I've got a different take on it, and that's the Rebecca Black phenomenon. Which is the Friday video, which I'm sure by now most people who are listening to this podcast have seen and realize just how truly awful it is.
But see, Lady Gaga's pissed off because he got more hits than she did.
But it's so bad. Rob, how bad is that video? How bad is that song?
I would say it's very, very bad. But you know what? But I know why it's so popular. So I'm not actually surprised at all.
Is it so bad that it's good though?
No, it's actually bad.
No, I think the lyrics are so bad that it's I mean,
you know what it is?
10, 20 years from now they're going, "Remember this song?"
Oh no, 10, 20 years from now they're not going to be talking about it's that like, song.
Was it Bay City Rollers Saturday Night?
SATURDAY.
No, that turns out to be the same thing, you know? It's like, oh yeah.
No, it's not.
Sort of.
Sorry. The basic bottom line is that anything unique will find an audience,
right.
And it's unique. And whether it's unique because it's good or bad actually isn't that relevant.
Right.
And that combined with the fact that kids enjoy watching other kids do anything.
Right.
And if it seems like something produced by kids or, you know, very limited talent adults in this case, kids perceive that as something that they could be doing. And kids, you'll always have an audience for
and
that.
They could do this, any kid.
Wait,
any,
but wasn't that
they the beginning make the video, though?
Wasn't that the beginning of rock and roll where everyone was classical and jazz and all of a sudden somebody came in with a guitar and said, hey, I'm not very good, but hey, I'm speaking to you.
This is all about the beginning of rock and roll.
Friday night. Come on, guys.
Well, yeah.
Because then it's Saturday, and Sunday we go to work.
This is more like the end of rock and roll.
But no, it talks about nothing. It talks about completely nothing.
Well, it talks about, I'm going to go to the car and Saturday.
I'm getting in the car. Do I sit on the left? Do I sit on the right?
The but front, you
know
what?
I don't know if you remember, Seinfeld was all about nothing. So this is really the Seinfeld of music today.
Seinfeld of bad times.
That's the Seinfeld of music.
You know what? It's not actually surprising how popular it is. It really isn't. Because what it does is it walks that line between what a kid would do for themselves, but it actually has the production values that obviously kids didn't do it. You know, kids could not have shot and edited and assembled the video. Kids could not have produced that track. It sounds like a polished pop track. But every kid listening to it feels like they could have done it, and it's very accessible.
And you know, Sarah Silverman's all pissed off because she wanted to do that song. I mean, comedians like SNL or Sarah, and you know, all these people could do a, you know,
it's hilarious. When I first
saw it or heard about it, I thought it was a skit.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, because you question: is this a joke or is?
Well, because the lyrics are just so bad. Yeah. I mean, the music's kind of like whatever.
Does anyone know the backstory? Is this just a kid with a rich dad who wanted to make a video?
I think she's 13.
Well, here's the thing. It's part of Arc Music Factory is the one that produced this, and basically, if you go online, essentially they produce a lot of kids, and they're kind of along the lines of like the Hollywood Star Academy. There's several little schools where your parents pay money to get stuff produced, things like that, you know, 10 grand, 5 grand, 2 grand, however much. And they get a little showcase and they get their music video and they get a song recorded.
I'll put a lot of money that she's going to do another one.
Oh.
Why would you? I mean, how many hits?
Right.
How many hits was this? How many million?
Oh, it was 62 million hits.
62 million. Yeah. I'll bank that payroll.
But see, that's my question is, and I was actually talking with Diego, who, by the way, is feeling under the weather right now. That's why he's not here. So, Diego, we're wishing you the best.
Feel better.
Get better. Hug a tree.
But, you know, fame is it's a dangerous thing. And you've got a 13-year-old who's now going to be defined by this music video. And that's a lot to have with you branded at such a young point in your life. Like, this is the girl that sang the worst song ever. You know?
But on the internet, is that what it's labeled, the worst song ever?
Oh, people are just grilling it. Yeah.
That girl and you read the comments, you're going to cry for like a year.
Well, she said, you know, that when she first read the comments, she cried. And, you know, I don't take anything away from Rebecca Black. I mean, she's cute and she was giving it her all. The thing is, she did not, you know, she wasn't holding back. She was working the song.
She did a great job. I mean, she.
I mean, the video is fine visually. It's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, all the bad stuff is the people that wrote the song and, you know, the lyrics and the how they recorded her and the way that they.
I hope she wrote the song. I hope she wrote it.
See, I don't know. A lot of those places.
Yeah, you know what it sounds like? It sounds like the producer went, no. I got a good idea for lyrics.
Yeah. But don't you feel, Rob, I mean, as a music producer, that like as an artist, that I mean, she was very personable and
completely
heartfelt and all of that. I mean, she certainly had that going for her.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah, well, that's what makes it so funny, though. I mean, because it actually looks and sort of sounds like a real video.
Yeah, but you know what? Adults are looking at it and laughing. Kids are not.
I know.
Kids think it's really cool.
No.
Seriously.
No.
Mike, you have kids. What do they say?
Plenty of kids. Even if they make fun of it, it's one
cool
of their
to
own
make
doing.
Fun of. I mean,
no,
you know. Yeah.
Listen, hey, you got to give her the fact that she's getting exposure and it's on Good Morning America and all this stuff. But
they would say, like, good news, bad news doesn't matter. Just spell my name correctly.
Right. Any press is good press.
Yeah.
That's the thing. But my question is that true? Because press like this, man, it's like you're digging yourself into a hole that is just deep and wide. And
it's true if you want to get 15 minutes of fame. It's not true if you want to have a career.
That's
but you never. The thing is, though, if she came out with one that was actually pretty decent,
not going
to
happen.
Right. But the reality is, you have to be so unusually good to stand out. Otherwise, you'll just be the noise. I mean, just so much noise on the net that you just kind of go, yeah, whatever, just another one of those.
Yeah, so now maybe she has attention and she can deliver something mediocre.
You would think Nickelodeon or Disney would bring her in and become one of the kids of the whatever.
Well, yeah. I mean, if I were her parents, the first thing I'd do is fire Arc Entertainment, go through whatever lawsuit's going to happen there because they probably signed her in an unbelievable, you know, contract, and just find somebody to write a good song because you've got people's ear. And even if you don't do as many as you did the first time, any amount, you know, 10% of that is still, you know, 6 million.
But you know what? The moment you're inside with a – the moment you're inside any kind of production machine, they're going to change the artist. And the thing that's unique about this is they left it raw and terrible. You know, they left the song terrible. They auto-tuned the crap out of it, and they polished it up and did a very polished production. But they didn't change what sounds like – you know, lyrics written by a semi-talented 13-year-old, which is what it ends up sounding like. She's very cute and personable, but the moment she'd be part of any bigger production machine, a song like this would never get through, and all of a sudden then she blends in with everybody else and doesn't have the uniqueness.
Yeah.
For that reason, it's hard to believe. Well, she may, you know, I've worked with kids who were very prolific and were writing songs constantly. It's possible she has dozens of these, and they're all... If she wrote that, it's possible she has others like it.
I feel like she didn't write all of that, though, because some of the – it just feels forced and awkward, a lot of it.
No, like, it doesn't seem to me like a song that any adult would have written and handed to her, although there is the route
you're right.
I think it's actually kind of genius how you could take those words and put any kind of rhythm against it and how they re-sing the word.
See, now we're calling it genius.
No, but you know what? That, it's not all that unique. There are plenty of songs – nearly that.
Well, I just thought it was pretty funny. You don't hear that.
I have no idea if she wrote it or not, but it's totally doable that an adult wrote that because I've heard some bad songs.
Yes, I'm guessing that she wrote a song and they inserted a little bit and say, no, you should say this. We so. What did she say?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like she. It doesn't sound like she could have possibly shown up at the label with no music, and because she was cute, they picked a song for her, and that was the song. It didn't go down that way.
Yeah.
I agree. It sounds like she probably had written part of it, and then some producers who know what they're doing tried to keep it true to her and purposely made it silly in spots. But you know what?
You know what's scary? There's probably somebody in this world who went, this is it. This is not her, but some producer went, I've got it. This is great. You're going to be a star.
It's but it's really interesting that it, I mean, the way it picked up steam because it was so bad, it got on Tosh.0, and then it just from there just went viral on the internet, and it just spread. And all this is the worst music video ever, and got on the front page of Yahoo. And I mean, it went huge.
But the thing is, it got huge, but it's good enough that it can be taken seriously as a bad music video. In other words, if it had just been her and her friends out there shooting it with their iPhones or a little handy cam.
Right.
It would have never gotten the attention, but it's because it's really produced like a real product that it got the attention. Which, and you know what? Bad gets just as much attention as good.
Yeah. Which goes back to...
Sometimes it gets more attention.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go to the Arc Music Factory, who are the people behind this, well, let me tell you, that song isn't even the worst one in the arsenal. There are, because they...
Well, maybe they're just terrible writers and gave her that song. Yeah.
And that's one thing I wanted to point out is if you're a parent out there and you want to get your kid involved in music, you got to be aware of these little pseudo hit factories that are out there because they're out there all over. They're all across the world. You'll see them. I mean, I know of a bunch of them in Hollywood. And I know of a bunch of them... really across the in New York and even in Dallas. And it, basically it's guys that get together and they charge parents $2,000, $10,000, $15,000. And they're guaranteed.
They have to pay to play is usually.
Exactly. And the parents, you know, they're not going to say no to their kid who has been performing in front of the mirror with the brush, you know, cause every kid thinks their kid's a star, you know? Heck, I think my kid's a star, but I've got a video to prove it. But, No, but seriously, every parent thinks their kid's a star, and they feed on that. So, you know, if you're a parent and you really want to get behind your kid's dreams, you just really got to to be aware of a situation like this, because in the long run, you know what? I think this is going to do way more damage than we could even think of, especially for her. I mean, I, my heart just goes out to her having this already branded on her for the rest of her life, because it's not going to go away. You know, even if she follows it up with a with another one, it's always going to be out there. Once it gets on the internet, it's there.
Yeah, but I kind of agree with Rob a little bit too, though, in that, you know, most people, their biggest problem, and even semi-talented people, they can't get any attention.
Right.
Because there's so many. So the moment you have a spotlight, your 15 seconds of fame, it's really then to decide what you do with it.
Yeah, she's got eyeballs. She's got eyeballs on her now. So
I mean, there's so many people that are amazing talent that never see the light of day.
That's true, too.
And you go, my God, why aren't they big? I don't know.
But that's the dance that you have to – it's this fine line between – you know, how you get your fame, what you do with your fame, and where...
You know what, though? Career-wise, it's better to be terrible than boring.
Yes, yes.
Agreed. And she now has this attention.
That's it.
It's funny because this summer, I'm going to have a whole lot to talk about with this very topic, because I've actually been involved with artist development and dealing with kids and record deals and all that stuff for a long time.
Right.
And it's true. There are a lot of really scary situations out there for parents. But the thing is, any parent with a talented kid would look at that video and say, well, my kid could do that and we'd have a better song. You know, everybody can make fun of the song, but they can't make fun of the fact that 60 plus million people have seen it and that everybody knows who she is. Now, it's about whether she has good management to figure out how to take what might be a laughing stock and turn it into a career.
Yeah, that's.
But there are definitely pathways to do that.
What would be a pathway?
Well, if she gets, let's say, the right producer saw her and realized she's very cute, assumed that behind the auto-tune she can actually sing, which, you know, who knows? The thing as a vocal producer that would scare me a lot is her pronunciation of things. Like, anybody who naturally says the word, sings the word today with an I in it, you know, that's a problem. So,
I mean,
but the right producer, if they found that and they said, okay, we got to get her with the right vocal coach for her pronunciation.
Right.
We got to get her with the right dance coach, but she already has 60 million eyes on her. It's very easy to then come out with a product saying, look what happened when she grew up a year. You know, she back then.
That's true.
You made fun, and now all of a sudden, look at her. I'm telling you, it's not. There aren't too many ways this is a negative, as long as she has thick enough skin to take the criticism. Right. Now.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Justin Bieber. I mean, are you saying that this kid is the most amazing kid? That this guy is a talent to be seen? And oh my God, he should be out there? No. You know, somebody found him.
Right.
You know, Usher produced him.
Right.
He was cute enough. The girls liked him.
Right.
He was a vehicle. And I think today's music, it's no longer like the music of the 60s where people go, I don't care what you look like, I just love the music.
Right.
It's all about the music. Well, in this day of age, it's not all about the music.
That's true.
Because kids barely listen to music. And what's great about YouTube is they want an event. They want a thing. And it's not even like a dance number anymore. That doesn't work for the videos. Now it's reality shows. It's something where it's real, but it's not. It seems perceived. And this, the worst video, she's now a reality contestant.
Yeah. I mean,
she could end up on a reality show very easily.
Yeah. The thing is with.
But she's 13.
With the whole Justin Bieber thing, though, is it grew from a positive. Like people were liking it because they liked the music. I know because.
You wait another year and everyone's going to go, oh, Justin Bieber.
That's true,
Bieber.
Too. But like.
But you know what? Justin Bieber is a much more difficult, expensive thing to package than she is. Because to make Justin Bieber work, you really do have to get great songwriters and great producers who know how to write as if they're his age. And, you know, there are a lot of those out there. We know from working on the High School Musical stuff and all that stuff and so many Disney projects. There are incredible writers out there who can write as if they're the age of the demographic that artist is being sold to. But to put all that together and produce the videos that go with it and develop the talent at the same time, because Justin Bieber's actually a talented kid.
Yeah.
But to develop all of that simultaneously is incredibly expensive. That's not what happened with her. With her, they took whatever was there that was good, packaged it the way they probably package everything they do, and managed to come up with something that was compelling enough that 60 million people want to make fun of it. which is great. They now have gotten some traction. Yeah. And who knows how many other times they tried it. Disney is very different. They'll weed through a zillion kids to find the one that they're going to make the entire company's focus for a whole year.
Right.
That's what Justin Bieber is the result of. It's much harder, and the odds are much worse to try to be the next Justin Bieber. But anybody could really be this girl, and that's one of the reasons that people find it compelling. Because everybody makes fun of how bad it is, but a lot of people are looking at it saying, well, my kid's better than that.
Right.
You know, probably every parent with a kid who sings is saying, my kid's better than that.
Right.
They don't realize exactly how many things had to go right. for this to
That's the perfect storm.
And the thing is, it also becomes about celebrity. I mean, look at Paris Hilton. Look at about Snooki. You know, there's so many people that have become celebrities. They don't really do anything. They're not even as, you know, Trump. How many times, you know, you're fired. He's gone bankrupt so many times. In the business world, he's terrible. But the reality is he's a celebrity, right. And people want celebrities now more important than the artist, or as important.
Well, you make a great point there. And also, Rob, to follow on what you were saying, you know, she did. She got her fame a really unique way. And the thing is, though, is I don't think anybody's going to be able to get as famous the same way.
Oh, never.
It was never.
Everybody else who does, every other cute girl who does a bad song is now a copycat.
Right.
You got to be the first. It doesn't matter what you're the first at. It just can't be boring. But you got to be the first.
I just, you know what? And I'll be curious to see what happens as she's famous, you know, with her on just hopefully she has a good, strong support system and strong family behind her, because fame, man, it is a double-edged sword. It is really something. I've worked with many a group, a band where, you know, you find out, you know, 10 years later that, you know, the guys are broke and living out of their van, and at one time they're playing arenas, and it's just, you know, it messes you up. It really does. And so just be careful. Keep your head screwed on straight, you know?
Well, what was the guy in the 60s, Tiptoe Through the Tulips?
Tiny Tim.
Tiny Tim?
Yeah. Tiny Tim.
And I mean, that was a car wreck. I mean, I remember the first time I saw him when I was a little kid going, what is that? You know?
That's true. Yeah,
I won't keep saying it, but you don't have to be good. You just have to be first.
Yes. No. Yeah, and he was. With a ukulele, you went like, that's terrible, but he's so...
Maybe it's time for another one of those. Maybe enough time has passed. Yeah. We're ready for a hip kid playing the ukulele.
Well, actually, a friend of mine's doing Bohemian Rhapsody with ukuleles.
That's odd.
Well, let me, you know, we spent enough time talking about this, but before we go, Rob, what advice would you give to a parent who has a kid that they think is talented and wants to break into music, wants to get into music? Would you recommend looking for a hit factory like the art people, or doing something on their own with YouTube, or what would you do?
It's a very, very deep subject, but right. The short version of the story, because there are so many scam artists and wannabes and stuff out there who are producers as much as there are artists, but I'd say if I had to lump a huge amount of advice into a couple sentences, it would be that you should find someone who has done for another artist what you would like them to do for your kid. In other words, not just that they have a track record of success, but they have a track record of success doing for another artist what you want your kid to be doing. And that's true whether it's a manager, a lawyer, an agent, or a producer, or a writer. Track record does matter a lot. And just because someone can talk a good game doesn't mean they actually can play one.
That's true.
So look for track record. Figure out what you think your kid represents in the industry, what kind of artist they want to be, and then only work with people who've done that before.
And if you have to go in any form of agreement, make sure there's a way out of it.
Well, that's the thing. Nowadays, because people, and still trying to keep the conversation short here, but because because you don't make your money selling your music anymore, the music is the calling card for all the other stuff that makes you money, like concert tickets and T-shirts and hats and all that stuff. Because of that, most producers who will work with your kid are going to want either a 360 deal, which means they own a piece of everything, or some other way that they're owning a piece of the parts of your career that are going to make money. Because a lot of times your music is what's going to be given away for free, or especially if you're a kid artist, your demographic knows how to steal music pretty easily.
But don't you think, though, that if certain things don't happen, if defined things don't happen...
You know what? The way deals work now, you never know what's going to work. So generally...
But if it doesn't work, you could say, I need to leave you.
No, but here's the thing.
Yeah.
A lot of times these contracts are structured in such a way that you never know what's going to work, what's not going to work, and how long it's going to take for it to not work. So a lot of parents are signing deals that just have no way out. And a lot of producers, it's a fine line you walk, because a lot of times you may not get any traction on the first album you do. So how many albums do you commit to? You know, do you commit to one album? Do you commit to two? I know of some kid artists who've been signed with independent labels that were signing 7 and 8 album deals, which are insane. And then the parents
seven
say, well,
or eight?
Yeah, and parents are saying, well, I can get out of that later. You know, any contract can be broken. It's like, well, you know what? Not cheaply it can. And if your kid's going to start making money, they're not going to let go of you so easy. So you have to always, as a parent, walk the fine line between committing your kid to a producer long enough that the producer is going to want to spend the time it takes to actually get you a career, because the first single may not do it. The first album may not do it. You got to walk that fine line with not being tied up for too long and sacrificing your kid's entire youthful years to one company.
Yeah.
The trick to all of this is having a good lawyer and a lawyer who specializes in entertainment. Don't take – I hear this happening all the time too – if you're working with a producer and the producer gives you a contract, don't, because you're trying to save money, take it to a lawyer friend of yours who is a good lawyer but just not an entertainment lawyer.
Right.
There are so many ins and outs and so much terminology that is specific to the music and entertainment industry. As soon as you're starting to think seriously about this, go to an entertainment lawyer with a lot of experience. It's going to be expensive and it'll be the best money you spend. It's much more important than a lot of the other expenses you're going to run into.
Wow. I think we're going to wrap it up on that, man. That's some great advice there.
That's good advice.
That is some good advice.
And I know this to be true because I've seen so many parents go
wrong. I know it to be true because of what I've seen Rob go through.
Yeah, he's seen me go through it. And honestly...
I mean, that's a podcast in itself, and it should be a good one.
It's a season of podcasts. But let me also wrap it up saying this. I've worked with many kids for many years. I mean, ever since I was a kid, I used to... help kids audition for a TV show in Philly when I was like 10 years old. I was accompanying them and helping them develop their voice for this stuff. In all of my years of doing this, I have never personally met a parent who did it right from the beginning. Well, not once, including ones who'd gotten good advice. It's just there's some natural weird thing where parents feel like because they love their kid, they know what's best for them. And everybody feels like they understand the music business because they love music. And it's just, it makes me sad to see it happen so much. And I try to give good advice early on. I've saved a lot of people a lot of grief by catching them before it was, you know, completely too late.
Right.
But the natural tendency is to say, you know what, I know what I'm doing, even though I've never done it before. And I know what's best for my kid, even though I have no idea how this industry works. and it's just a terrible, sad thing. With this girl, what's her name, Rebecca Black?
Yeah.
With her, you're going to know. By a year from now, whether you see her doing anything or not, you're going to know what kind of family she has, what kind of deal she was signed to with these guys. It'll be very telling whether she has another song out with a totally different team or not, or if it's the same team. Right. You're going to be able to tell a lot about how the industry works and how families work by whether or not you see her next year.
Wow. It's like watching a lab experiment just unfold.
Pretty much.
And one thing also is that... an iPad, an iPhone, and an artist are all the same thing. And it says people, well, no, it's a human being. It's a product.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. When the product doesn't work, you take it off the shelf. It's that simple.
I'd take the iPad over all those. Hey, last thing I want to say is, you should, if you start to get any kind of fame, just manage it and just know... just be aware of consequences of what gets out in the internet, especially if you have a Twitter feed and you start getting a lot of people following you, because it's so easy to become famous for all the wrong reasons now, you know? And so it's just this.
Have your friends film you as you drink too much and throw up. That's great, you know?
I just be aware. That's all I'm saying, because it's you just never know where that video camera is. You never know if you're going to be caught in the next viral video. And, And especially Twitter feeds, man. I've seen, you know, people getting fired because they do a joke over a Twitter feed, and it's just, you know,
How about Gilbert Gottfried?
You know,
he has a one-word, super mega-paying career. All he has to do is say Aflac from time to time, gets massive residuals, and blows it by putting out some not-so-funny jokes on Twitter.
Did you hear about the one joke he put?
Yeah, it was terrible.
I didn't think it was that bad.
It just wasn't even funny. He did a bunch of them, though. It wasn't just one.
The one joke that I heard that they announced, and I'm like...
No, they were just tasteless, but they weren't that funny.
Yeah.
But there were a bunch, and they were about Japan.
But it's him.
That's exactly it. That's his shtick.
I also think, though, just on that note, that sometimes people get fired because they can. It's like, give me an excuse. Just give me that excuse, and then you do something stupid. They get that window, and you're done.
That's probably true, too. Because
if they love you, they go, it was a joke. Come on. Course. And if they don't... They're contractually, he's done.
Of course.
Well, all I know is, just watch what you're going to, you know, before you tweet, just think about it, you know.
Charlie Sheen wants, you know, they want him back.
It's crazy. Well, you know, I get people email me about doing a Twitter feed for the Audio Nowcast, you know. Hey, how come you guys don't tweet? And I'm like, this would be our tweets. I'm working on something really cool today. Can't say anything about it. we just finished a really great project, but can't say anything about it. I'm working with somebody I can't name on something that I can't say anything about, but it's just going to be cool.
Everything you say will be used against you in the court of the internet.
That's right. I can't even tell you if I am working or not working today. That's how top secret.
That's how you know they're working for Disney.
Anyway, well, hey, listen, guys, we're going to wrap it up. And that was a good conversation there. Great advice, Rob.
Cool.
Wow. This has been a good advice, starting off with Scott.
My kid will take your course then.
Well, there was a lot of good advice tonight. My personal stuff was all learned from the personal experience.
To do it wrong. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Been there, done that many, 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 many times.
I can tell when the passion comes out from Rob.
Oh, yeah.
Because he gets closer to the microphone and just starts going for it, you know?
Well, like I say, we're going to have a lot more about that to talk about later.
All right. Well, we're looking forward to it. All right, gang. Well, are you working on anything fun, exciting that you can talk about?
I am, what am I working on? Yes, I am actually, I'm working on a few things that I can talk about, but one thing that I've worked on a bunch of, I talked about it a few podcasts ago, that I've been doing some work with Google. I'm mixing a bunch of their stuff and working with them on different sound projects. And I just, on a lark, decided to go online to see if any of these things have been posted, because I know that a lot of them are destined to end up on YouTube. And I've discovered that a bunch of them are up there. So I'll give you... Actually, I just discovered one that we did a few months ago about an Arctic adventure where these two guys sailed around the Arctic using Google Apps so people could track where they were.
Right.
And it's on YouTube.
Oh, great.
The project when we did it was called Arctic Adventure.
I'll
send you the link. But I've done a bunch of these... Google films that are really cool, and you know, when a little time has gone by and I see them fresh, I realize those are actually pretty cool. So I'll give you links so you can put them up there, because we've done a few of those.
Great.
And actually I'm doing some new stuff for them coming up, but mostly right now working on some... Actually, I've been doing a lot of industrial films lately for big companies, and so I have a few of those in the works.
Cool. Brandon, how about you?
Well, we just finished up a bunch of big projects, which is nice. It's a little calmer now, but working on Sherlock 2 and a green superhero movie. I don't know if we're supposed to talk about it yet.
All right, we'll just leave it at that.
Green, like he's environmentally friendly? Or
Possibly.
Or he eats too much asparagus?
There's a couple green superhero movies out there right now, so you don't know which one.
Scott, how about you?
I can't talk about anything green right now. So I'm finishing and mixing down a bunch of cinematics for a video game. And I start... a new project for probably 4 to 6 weeks, starting Monday.
Nice.
I can't talk about colors, though.
All right. See? This is our Twitter feed, right?
Oh, and the other part is, I think maybe at their next podcast, we can talk about the sound design competition at Waves.
Great. Yeah, we'll have to talk about that. And Brett, hey man, it's good to see you. And
it was a lot of fun, actually. I'm surprised I haven't.
So where are you working?
I'm working on Marvel Comics Avengers for Disney XD.
Nice.
So there's that, and then a little bit of Dan Versus, and so I've been busy, really busy.
See,
I mean, in that, I don't get much sleep.
And we could say we knew you when.
Yes.
Well, you got the Audio Nowcast bump, and that just got your career. That set your career on fire. Right? Isn't that how it works? I'm still waiting for that, but I think that's how it works.
No, it does. You should be. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, you should be skyrocketing now.
Cool. Maybe 103 will be the charm.
It just keeps bumping you senseless. You know?
Is that what it is?
It's Friday.
Yeah.
But last time Brett was here, he was just starting off and, you know, just acquiring his gear and still working a couple jobs. And
sure.
Now you're doing full-time sound design. It's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's really nice. I'm really lucky, I feel, to fall into the people, with the people that I'm working with. I think they're really talented. They sort of force me to bump up my game a little bit.
That's always the best thing.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So.
And I will say one thing I can say about Brett, and actually most of the guys here is, I mean, he really is sold out to learning his craft, and he would call me up and ask questions, and we could talk about gear forever, and you just got to be able to do that. If you can't do that, if you cannot sell out to wanting to design and think about, you know, sound design or think about gear or just, you know, have that hunger, it's just not going to work. It's just not going to come to you. You got to work 8 hours a day and then go home and still want to talk about it for another couple hours, because it has to be that.
Or pass out. I just have
I'll also give a little quick shout out to our boy Jeremy, who records the podcast.
Hey, yes. Jeremy!
Because he and his pal Sam are actually working on a film, and they've been doing some work up at my place.
Right.
And I got to say, the boy knows his Pro Tools.
Nice!
Impressive.
Nice. Yes, Jeremy does a great job. And
You're welcome, Jeremy.
Well, that's great. Well, that's awesome.
I think it's dinner time now.
Yeah. What?
Oh, Mike, what have you been working on?
Mike,
what have you been working on?
Oh, don't ask him.
He can't say.
So, Mike, what are you working on that you're allowed to talk about?
Not much, but thanks for asking. No, I finished a couple things that I actually could talk about. Well, one was obviously the Prey 2 teaser, but I also did Lego Star Wars commercials, and that was really
my
fun.
My son now loves you.
That was pretty fun, and worked with the other mixer over at work at Sean Duffy, who did a lot of sound design on them, and then mixed them, and it was really fun. There's a couple. If you haven't seen the little Clone Trooper one, it'll just make you laugh. It's hilarious.
That's brilliant.
So that was kind of fun. And
very
then,
cool.
Have some things that I can't talk about, but I at least wanted to mention those. So thanks for asking, guys.
Oh, anytime.
Hey, and before we go, I want to give out a couple shout-outs to a couple guys out there. One is a listener who's sends me some emails, and his emails are always awesome. His name's Andrew Bosserman, and he gave me, Bosserman, I think.
I know Andrew. Hi, Andrew.
He gave me a great idea for a podcast that we'll talk about in the next couple ones, but I just wanted to give him a shout out because I haven't emailed him back.
Andrew.
Because I've been working, but he's done some really great stuff. He actually talked about the quality of our podcast, and we switched from stereo to mono 64 because that way we get full, you know, instead of splitting it into 232s, it's 164. It sounds really good, and I just have to give Andrew, full credit for doing that.
Cool.
But other than that, I just want to remind everybody, we've got the API swag, so if you send us an email as to why you like the Audio Nowcast, we'll pick two of them from the vast number of emails that we get.
Ooh.
All four of them. You probably got a 50-50 chance of getting some swag. So,
nice.
If you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And you can also check out our Facebook page. And one other thing is a lot of people have been sending some emails as to about the podcast and when they come up. And I apologize that we've, you know, let weeks go by, but one of the unique things about our podcast is everybody involved with the podcast is working. And sometimes when it gets really busy, it's just hard coordinating, getting all the guys together on a evening and sitting down. So sometimes we'll be able to be really consistent and do it every 2 weeks, but sometimes there's going to be 3 or 4 weeks where that might go by. We're still here. We're not going anywhere. Rob will be at the next podcast.
Well, I come here every single night, just, and then every now and then there's a podcast, but I show up every single day.
But we try to do at least one a month, but, you know, sometimes we get into, and just be patient with us. But the fact that we're all working kind of gives the Audio Nowcast its unique perspective, is the fact that we're all doing this right now. So just,
or they could just send in some cash and we'd show up more often. You know, that always works.
Work for food.
That's right. All that to say, lay off. All right. Well, hey, thanks a lot, guys, for showing up.
No problem.
All right. Well, for myself and all the guys, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses AFEX's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.